and you get out of bed for something, and then you go back and you get to get back in bed for just a little bit, and you sort of doze off to the point where you're still semi-awake so that you can actually enjoy the fact that you're resting, and you're not fully asleep where it's pointless because you don't even know you're sleeping. I've never liked sleep for that reason. I love when I'm half awake where I'm like, I think I'm sleeping now, and it feels so good. Have you ever been there? I was there this morning, right? I got out of bed to do a couple things, got back in bed, laid down on my pillow, set my timer for the 15-minute countdown, and I had those 15 minutes to just lay there and just rest. It was beautiful. I was awakened out of that beautiful state by this word, "Puppy!" Just like that, which is my 3-year-old son stuck his nose at my nose. My eyes were closed. I had no idea. So, you know, suddenly it comes out, and that word translates basically, I need to go to the bathroom, and I'm not sure if I can take care of myself, so you need to get out of bed and come help me. And all that, 2 seconds from my nose, right? Out of that wondrous rest that you have. I mean, it killed everything. This is the reason that on my Facebook this week, I put the quote, "Parenting is a beautiful madness." That's what I put on my Facebook, because that's what it feels like, you know? It's beautiful, I love it, but it's madness. It's madness. Sometimes you just go, what? So this last 3 weeks, we've been on vacation with the family, and I've been around the kids all day long, and it's been a blast. But, you know, when you're around them 3 straight weeks, things happen. And so I've just been asking God, you know, God, what is it you want to show me, do in me, shape in me, teach me these 3 weeks as I'm going about life? Because God tends to teach us far more as we're going about life if we just keep our eyes open than he does in a 7-minute devotional that we do first thing in the morning. So both are important, but as you just observe life, things happen, right? And so it all began for me on the boardwalk between the house and the beach. We were walking one day, and my 3-year-old son, Cole, had a boogie board that was bigger than him, and he wants to carry the boogie boards himself. So we're walking, and the wind is blowing. Some of the days at the beach, it just blows, and it's kind of a crosswind, and it was blowing today. So we're walking. He's right in front of me. I got some chairs on my back, and I got a few things in my arm, and I got a little more room. And this boogie board, he's holding it like this. And that thing is blowing him into the side of the boardwalk. So he smashes into it, and then he pushes back against the wind, takes 3 steps, smashes into it, pushes again. So I'm observing this, and finally I look at myself, and I'm like, I can carry one more thing. I'm like, Cole, listen, buddy, give me your boogie board, and I'll carry it to the beach for you. And he turns around, looks me straight in the eye, and he goes, no, just like that. And he goes on about his business, being blown by the wind into the side. I'm waiting for the boogie board to get blown over the railing, at which point I'll get sent into the weeds to go and find it. And I wait another minute, and I say to Cole again, Cole, buddy, the boogie board is going to blow you over. Give it to me, and I'll give it back to you at the beach. And he turns around and he says, no, you won't. It's like that. You're right. You're right. I'm going to take your boogie board. I'm going to walk to the beach with it. And then just when you want to have some fun, I'm going to go, I carried it. It's mine. What? I mean, what kind of idiocy is going on in his head, right? But there he stands with his boogie board, and his horrible dad behind him is going to take that thing and never give it back. So as long as he holds on to it, I can't take it. And so he walked the entire way in the wind, smashing into the side, walking with that boogie board. And when he got to the beach, that thing was flipping everywhere, and he was holding on to it like a little crazy kid. I wasn't going to touch it. Go ahead. Enjoy your horrible little life. So he's walking down to the beach, right? And in that moment, I started wondering, I wonder how much of my world these kids get themselves into something because the idea in their head that they have about me is wrong. That they have some idea in their head and it's wrong about me, and so therefore they live a life in a particular way that is detrimental to themselves because they don't know me, right? So I start observing, and it is fascinating how much things occur on any given day. I actually counted in a 7-day period this statement out of my 3-year-old's mouth over 30 times in 7 days, right? Hey, not fair! Just like that. Have you ever heard that one? Hey, not fair. Here's the fascinating thing. Not one of all 30 times was there any injustice whatsoever. Not once. Not even one. I couldn't even point to one and go, well, at least this one isn't fair. You're right. No, they were all totally fair situations. He just went, hey, not fair. We went out on the Jeep on the beach because my uncle has a Jeep, and so he brought it down, and we took the kids on the beach. I'd taken Cole on the beach in the Jeep the first day. Then he got to go again in the Jeep the second day with his brother. So the third day, I'm going to take my daughters in the Jeep. He hears about it. He walks right in the kitchen. Hey, not fair. I go, Cole, who went in the Jeep yesterday? Me. Who went in the Jeep the day before? Me. Have your sisters gone in the Jeep? No. Well, there you go. Not fair. Just like that. I want to go again. I'm like, dude, you know, we were sitting at the table one day. This is about 19 times into, hey, not fair. And I bring a carrot out to my other son. A carrot. My Cole doesn't even like carrots. And I bring it out. I put it on Cullen's plate. And Cole goes, hey, not fair. It's like that. I turn to him and I go, well, buddy, life ain't fair. Get used to it. My dad goes, well, that's quite a lesson for a 3-year-old to learn. What I should have said to my son was, you don't get fair. You have a skewed view of what's fair, and you need to get over it. Because it wasn't actually that life is unfair. It's that he doesn't understand justice, right? He's got his own view of justice. See, as these things progress, you start recognizing very quickly that my children live in a whole different world than I live. I live in one world, and I see the world one way, and they live in a whole different world, and they see it another way. I mean, it's understandable, isn't it? You go in the ocean, you get it. I'm standing about just over the knees deep in water. The waves coming at me hit me about my waist, and I look over those waves, and I see about 9 waves behind it, and I see them building. So I can anticipate what's coming down the pike. My son, on the other hand, stands neck deep in the water next to me, and all he sees in front of him is a massive wall of water 10 times his size. Yeah, he sees the world differently. If I was neck deep in the water and there was a massive wall of water 10 times as high as me, I would be scared too, wouldn't you? I mean, I'd want to run away. But I don't get to live that life because I'm bigger. And so I recognize that as I see the world, I see the world differently than they see the world, and the way they see the world oftentimes leads them to misunderstand what's going on and then act like a child, right? How about needs? I love this one, needs, right? Every one of my 4 children in the last week that we were on the vacation, every day, this is every day, every one of my 4 children walked in somewhere and made this kind of statement. I'm hungry. Fantastic. Sorry to hear that. You don't even know what hunger is what I want to say. Or, you're going to make lunch for us? Just like that. I heard my poor wife on several occasions make this statement. Do I look like your servant? Is that what I look like? Do I look like a servant to you? Because I am not here to exist to serve you, right? Because you feel that way. These kids, it's as though you exist to meet their needs. And the second you miss one of them for just a momentary second, they're there to tell you, you missed a need. I have a need. You missed it. Are you going to fix that? Because I'm your child, for crying out loud. Where were you? Right? I mean, needs are crazy. What about fears? Fears. They have strange fears, don't they? Now, fear is an interesting thing because there's rational and irrational fears. And fear changes depending on the circumstances. My 3-year-old walks into the ocean with huge waves without me. Should he be afraid? Yes. Those waves will pummel him and drown him, and the current will draw him out. When I walk into the ocean with him and hold him, should he be afraid? No, because now I've got him. But still, you sense in him the fear because in his head, he's asking this question. Dad, can he hold me? Can he? I mean, can he really? Because these are big waves, and if he lets go of me, or if he just simply decides I'm no longer important and forgets me, then I'm going to drown. So they cling to you like anything. But it's funny when your kids get older, like Hadley and Hope now and Cullen, I go in the ocean. Now my job isn't so much to hold them, but to teach them how to get through the waves, right? Because otherwise there'll be a 29-year-old adult clinging to some other adult in the ocean like this going, the wave's horrible, splash, splash, the wave's horrible. And we don't want that because that's weird. So we want to teach them to be able to walk in and deal with waves. So what you have to do is you have to take them in and you have to let go for a second, right? And go, now you go under the wave and it'll be fine. And those first few times, right, you see all the questions in their eyes. But what if it pummels me? What if it drowns me? What if it kicks me? And you look at them and you say, listen to me now. If by some chance this wave actually pummels you, everything about my next 15 seconds will be to find you and bring you up. Trust me. The ocean is just not that big right here. And the wave will push you into the shallow waters. And I will be running behind you. Because remember, I'm knee deep in the water. And I will pick you up. Oh, that sounds beautiful, doesn't it? But I know better because I'm 10. And I know when this wave gets me, you will be somewhere else. And I'll be drowning. And you go, no, I'll be right there, I promise. Tasks are wonderful, aren't they? Kids have been playing 4 straight days without any bothering of any adult. And you finally go, kids, everybody down here. Okay, can somebody please clean up that board game? Just that little board game. And this is what you immediately get. He took it out. I didn't play with it. I didn't touch it. Yes, you did. You took it out. No, I did. And finally you go to your rooms. I'll clean up the board game. That wasn't worth it. Right? Or you get this response. Aww, why? Why? Because you've been playing for 4 days straight while your servants have been cleaning up behind you. Now it's your turn. But oh no, it's tasks are way too much. Because you're asking so much and pulling them from so much fun. That's how kids respond to tasks, don't they? Oh, Journey is wonderful. Don't you love Journey? We got in the car yesterday morning at 6 a.m. We arrived here at 9 p.m. It's approximately 13 or 14 hours, depending on how you run it. And when you leave at 6 a.m., you tell the children, this is a long trip. The sun is going to come up. It is going to go back down again. And we will still be driving. We have DVD players. We have entertainment systems. We've got games, music, and we're going to stop for 3 straight meals. It's going to be a fun day. 10 minutes into the trip, call goes, are we there yet? Dude, 10 minutes. So I go, Cole, think of it this way. It's going to be forever, okay? Forever. 15 minutes later. It's been forever. Are we there yet? Like, okay, clearly your view on forever is different than mine, okay? Because you see, as an adult, I've got the GPS and the thing, and I got 14 hours in my head and the context on that, and I understand what that looks like. I know where I'm going. I know what track I have to take. I know at each stop where we're going to go. As a child, all you know is the next 10 minutes, right? And when those 10 minutes are over and you're still in the car, that's not a happy place for you. And so you go, excuse me, what's the problem here? Have you not gotten me to where I need to go yet? I'm just curious what you have forgotten. Not to get me there. And that's how kids respond to us. That's it. They look at us. Now, if consequences come their way, it gets really interesting, doesn't it? Because, oh, consequences are terrible things. And consequences occur because of 3 reasons in a kid's life, always. Either they do something stupid, that's most of the time, okay? Or somebody else in their family, that's another kid, does something stupid that they were told not to do, and their problem affects another child. Cole, do not play with that sword. Ah! I told you not to hit Hadley. What did poor Hadley do? Nothing. But she faces the consequence of Cole's horror, right? And so when you live in community, you got to understand there are bad people around you that are going to affect your life. And they're going to create consequences because we live on a sinful planet. And that's what happens. Sometimes it's you. Sometimes it's them. But that's going to happen in life. My job as a parent is whatever consequence comes your way is to try and navigate you through it in such a way that you do not die, okay? So there it is. There's a third type of consequence, and that is when you do something you're not supposed to do that could lead to a horrible consequence, but I step in ahead of time and say, you ever do that again, I will kill you. And that's the punishment consequence where I create consequences for my children. We call that discipline. Because I'm teaching them that in real life, the consequences are far more dangerous than me sending you to your room. And in that same way, whenever a child faces a consequence, they are mad at somebody, aren't they? Mad at you for sending them to their room when you're trying to explain to them, you did this to yourself. Mad at their brothers when they were the one that disobeyed, or mad at the world when they got hurt because of somebody else. But it's always mad at somebody. And for sure, it's not going to be okay. If all that fails, If all that goes away, and we've covered all that ground, and I've taught my children each one of those wonderful things, they resort to the final wonder that makes them children. My 3-year-old son currently asks this question every 30 seconds. What if? What if? What if? We're walking down the boardwalk, and it always starts this way. What if you throw me off the boardwalk, Dad? Cole, I'm not going to throw you off the boardwalk, buddy. Yeah, but what if you do? Well, I'm not going to. Well, what if the wind blows you and causes you to bump me off the boardwalk? Well, the wind isn't that strong, buddy. Well, what if a giant comes and picks me up and makes you throw me off the boardwalk? A giant's not going to come, buddy. Well, what if he has a sword? Well, then I'll have a gun. Well, what if your gun's smaller than his sword? Well, then I'll have a bigger gun. Well, what? Okay, enough. I'm not kidding. You think I'm making this up? I'm not. That's how the conversation goes. It goes from normal, which is it's not going to happen, to okay, fine, bring in the giants. Trust me, it's going to happen. And that's where kids go. What if? What if? What if? See, you may tell me one thing, but what if? So I'm watching all this unfold in my life this week, and I'm going, God, what are you trying to teach me? What are you trying to show me here? Because it started dawning on me, what changes this? You know, what changes this? There's a clear difference between my 3-year-old and his irrationalities and my 10-year-old. Like Hadley will now give me her boogie board if it's windy. Or she'll hand me her candy bar to take the wrapper off and say, can you open this for me? Whereas Cole will go, no, you'll eat it. I'm like, I gave it to you as a snack. Why would I eat it now? Are you crazy? But he'll hold that candy bar wrapped up so that he can keep it. So I see my daughter has progressed. It's really cool. And my son's still got some ways to go. My other kids are progressing. And I recognize that in the process, my daughter has realized some things about me that has caused her to change her thinking and therefore her actions, right? She's recognized that I don't eat the candy bars when I open the wrapper. I give the boogie board back when we get to the beach. If I say 14 hours, we eventually get there, even though she can't quite conceive of 14 hours. The thing she starts recognizing about the world, and she trusts that what I get to see that she doesn't see is good enough for her to be able to settle herself with whatever's going on. Now, that's not true across the board for Hadley. That's just true in some areas at 10. At 20, hopefully even more so. For me at 36, my dad was there this weekend. And I thought about this. I thought, what is it that's brought me to a place that I absolutely trust my father and my mother at this point? If my dad came to me today and he said, Renaud, listen, here's what I need. I need you to shut everything down, to up and move to Baghdad and do some stuff there. I would do it. You know why? Because my dad would never ask me that unless there was something massive behind the scenes that only he knew. Because my dad would never do anything to be a detriment to me. Never. Never. Unless it was so critical to the future of my life and the lives of others that he felt it was important. I know that about my dad. I have no doubt about my dad about that. So if he asks me to do anything, I'll do it. I'll do it. Because I trust him, because he loves me. See, progressively, I have lived a life where I have recognized more and more that despite all the things that go on, my parents love me. And though my son at 3 knows that, if you walked out there right now and you said to Cole, who loves you, Cole? He would say, Daddy or Mommy, because I've trained him to do that, so he does it very well, okay? But deep down, I trust that in that training, he actually believes that on some level. You know, he knows I hug him a lot, I tell him a lot, I play with him a lot, and so I love him. But Cole has not translated that love into his life yet. It's still a thing that's separated. Dad loves me, but this is my boogie board, right? Because Dad will take it, and Dad won't give it back. And so he lives in a world where he has yet to experience any kind of real freedom because his life is still trapped in the knowledge that I'm the bad guy in some level, that I'm not necessarily the good guy. I'm good, but not that good, right? And so God begins to whisper to me, Renaud, do you know that I love you? Do you know that I love you? And of course, the answer is obvious, right? If you've followed God for a while, oh, yes, God, you love me. You love me. And then he goes, okay, that's good. It's a good start. I've trained you well. Who loves you, Renaud? God. Who loves you, Renaud? God. Okay, got it. Now, question. When it comes to your stuff, when it comes to your injustices, when it comes to your fears, when it comes to your tasks, when it comes to those things, do you know that I love you? Well, I think so. Okay, well, let's check it then. Let's just ask the question, right? Let's look at stuff. So I look at stuff, right? You look at the church in general. It's fascinating to me that God comes along to us and he says to us, when it comes to your resources, that's your time, your material possessions, your life, your responsibilities, all those things, that we are to start right out the bat saying, first, when I get all that you've given me, this is yours. I'm going to give this to you because the freedom I have is to live in this place where everything I have is yours. You give me the candy bar. It's actually yours, but you allow me to eat some of it. So my natural response is, you want a bite, right? And so here's what God says. And actually, oddly enough, he uses this idea of 10%, right? Time, money, all those things. He goes, 10% of your life ought to at least be directed first and foremost to the freedom that comes with following God, right? I guarantee you that if we looked across the board at churches in America, or even in this church across the board, I would be blown away if more than 5% of us give more than 10% of our time or resources to God. I'd be blown away. If we're anywhere close to 10%, I'd be blown away, honestly. I can tell you right now, for most of us, our resources and our time and our things, we hold on to them like a boogie board. And we all have the same thing. Well, I wish I could, but I can't. Because you see, I got stuff I got to do. I got to live. And so we got the boogie board. I wish I could give it to you, Dad, but I got to go boogie board. And if I give it to you, you'll take it. And then what am I going to do? Stand on the beach without a boogie board. Huh, it's not good. And we respond the same way to God. Our fear is the same thing. God goes, I got you. I'm with you. First set of waves come our way, and we're like, where are you? Where are you? And God goes, I'm right here. I won't let you drown. I'm drowning now. Can't you see it? No, you're not. You're talking to me. Well, it feels like I'm drowning. I should be drowning. Well, when you're drowning, I'll pick you up. Well, I'm about to drown. Why don't you just pick me up now? Well, because I'm trying to teach you something. I don't want to be taught. I just want to be held. Well, you know, and there we are. Do you trust God? Do you love him? Do you know his love? Well, maybe not, right? Oh, I love journey, right? When's God ever going to get me to where I need to be? I mean, have you ever felt this way? I mean, that beautiful moment of your life that's going to make everything happy is just 6 months down the road or a year. You can't see it because you're like, oh, I'm in this fog, especially now. We love it. Our economy falls apart and all of us are in a fog. How will we ever live? Yeah. Are we there yet, God? Are we there? Are we there yet? I mean, it goes across the board. I could go on and on. But you know, if all else fails, when it all else fails, and God goes, I got you, I got you, I got you, I got you, then we pull this one. Well, what if? What if that happens? And what if this happens? And what if this goes wrong? And what if you don't see that? And what if you ignore me? And what if? And God goes, I'm not going to. Well, what if a giant comes and eats you? Well, I'm God. I created the giants. Well, what if there's a bigger one than you created? And I mean, watch yourself. Watch. You'll do it. I trust me. You'll come up with stuff in your head. And you, when you actually analyze it, you're like, what am I doing, man? How many times do we say, God, do you have any idea what you're doing? I mean, how hard would it be for you just to take care of this one little problem? Seriously. I mean, I could do it, for crying out loud, if I were you. And God goes, I know. It's okay. I got it covered. See, God communicated very clearly in his word, very clearly, verbally and actively, that he deeply loves us, deeply. Jeremiah chapter 31, verse 3, he says, literally, his words to Jeremiah, he says, I have loved you with an everlasting love, and I have shown you my everlasting kindness. I have loved you with an everlasting love. There is nothing you can do or will do or could do, no circumstance that will come, that I will not love you through. And love, by definition, means that I look out for you, right? So the God of the universe says, I got you back. I love you. I'm not going to let this life do something to you that will ultimately be for your damage or detriment. Oh, it may feel that way at times. Oh, you may be tumbling in the waves at times, but trust me, my hand is right there, and at just the right time, I will pull you out because I am showing you the process. of this planet and what matters. And at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, guess what we're going to do? We're going to walk right out of the ocean together into a place I've prepared for you. I mean, it's all done at the end, right? God demonstrates his love actively for us. Listen to this, Romans chapter 6. Paul writes, and this is what he says. Romans chapter 5, verse 6. You see, listen to this now, at just the right time, when we were still powerless, Christ died for the ungodly. Very rarely will anyone die for a righteous man, though for a good man someone might possibly dare to die. But God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Okay, so there's the demonstration, right? You got it? I verbally tell you, I will love you with an everlasting love. I demonstrate it actively by becoming flesh and blood and dying when you hate me. In fact, I'll let you kill me. How about that? That'll be fun. And then when I'm dead and I've died, I'll come back from the dead. I'll tell you I love you. I'll shoot off into heaven, and I will show you that I'm going to prepare a place. His disciples, perfect example, right? These guys were insane. They were like my little kids, but just worse, right? I mean, Jesus would say things to them like, okay, so here's the deal, okay? I'm going to die, and I'm going to go, and I'm going to change the world eternally. And they go, that's awesome, Jesus. When are we taking Rome? No, Rome's not part of the equation. Well, I thought I was going to rule in Rome with you. Well, no, we're not going to rule Rome. But we need to. You're the Savior. No, I'm going to save the world. Oh, that's awesome. Are we going to take Rome still? I'm not even kidding. Read it, right? Or this one. John, listen to this. The two brothers, John and James, the sons of Zebedee, they sent their mom to Jesus to ask him if they can be the leaders next to him when he takes over the kingdom. They're like, you go tell Jesus we should be next to him, not those other 10 idiots. I'm not even kidding. Just like my kids. But after Jesus dies and he comes back from the dead and he appears to them and he goes up into heaven, on his way up, he says to them, I'm going to prepare a place for you. Whatever happens on this planet, trust me, it's pocket change in comparison to what's waiting for you. After that, and being empowered by the Holy Spirit, guess what happened to them? They would get beaten for their faith, and this would be their response. Oh, thank God I was counted worthy of suffering for Christ. Everything changes, right? When you know the love of God and you understand that he's always got it, no matter what comes, then the waves get small, the fears go away, circumstances don't mean much anymore, and suddenly you live in an incredible freedom where everything you have is his and you give it to him freely and you don't care because he keeps giving it back. And that's where you live. Listen to this. Paul puts it this way. I love this. That same passage I just read in Romans chapter 5, it ends this way, but God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Watch this. You ready for this? Paul writes, since we have now been justified by his blood, how much more shall we not be saved from God's wrath through him? For if, when we were God's enemies, we were reconciled to him through the death of his son, how much more, having been reconciled, shall we be saved through his life? Do you see what Paul's saying? He's talking to us, all of us, and he's saying, get this! If God has already demonstrated his love for us to the extent that while we hated him, he gave his only son to pay for our stuff, how much more now that we're reconciled to him and we're his sons and daughters, will he not take care of us? I mean, what are you fretting about? What are you running around about, shouting about? God loves you, man. And that's what Paul's saying. If he's already shown you, now it should be easy. Now it should be easy. But we're three, right? And we're standing neck deep in the water. And the waves are coming. And God seems distant, I think. And we've got needs. And doesn't he meet them? And my golly, my child is sick. My bank account is empty. Hey! It's not fair. I mean, if it's somebody else's kid, I feel for them, I do. But it's mine. Now, it's not fair. Our skewed view of injustice on this planet messes us up all the time. And across the board, we're like my kids. And God says, if you know my love, you will hand me your stuff, hand me your life, you will fear nothing. Because whatever comes, I'll be there. And consequences, when they come, because somebody else is messing up, you'll trust me enough to fix whatever cut you've got. I'll fix it. I'll put a band-aid on it. I'll get it all healed up. And if you do something stupid and fall off a banister and hit your head, I'll bandage that up too because I love you. And every now and then, when you do something, I will actually create a consequence for you to discipline you. But don't forget this. Hebrews chapter 12, right, says this. If you're disciplined by the Lord, be grateful, because God only disciplines those he loves and those who are his sons and daughters. If you don't receive discipline from him, I would be really worried. But if he loves you and you are his son or daughter, he will discipline you just like I discipline my children to protect you from a life that is hellbound, right? Across the board, our freedom comes when we know that God loves us and we live in that trust. Listen to this passage. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 5 and 6 says this. You ready? Lean not on your own understanding. Don't lean on your own understanding. Total waste of time, right? Because here's your understanding. Neck deep in the water, wall of water, and you've got all these skewed views about justice and fairness and life and circumstance. You don't even know. You're three. What do you know? You don't even know how to read a GPS yet. You don't even know when the journey ends. That's you. And you're going, I know better than you, God. He goes, don't lean on your own understanding. Trust me. Trust me. Lean not on your own understanding. But acknowledge me in all your ways. What does that mean? Do what I tell you. That's how you acknowledge God. James says, you can tell me you have faith. Whoop-dee-doo. So do the demons. Who cares? But I will show you my faith by what I do. So acknowledge God by living, handing that boogie board over, or trusting him in the water, or pummeling in the waves and going, I know you got me. I know you got me. I'm just waiting. I won't drown. I won't drown. Trust him. Acknowledge him in all your ways. And he will make your path straight. That's what it says. Do not lean on your own understanding, but acknowledge the Lord in all your ways, and he will make your path straight. Trust in him is how that verse starts. Trust in the Lord, and lean not on your own understanding. You see where it all starts? Trust in him. Trust in him. So when you leave here, know this. Know this without a shadow of a doubt. You live in a very different world than God does. He is a million feet tall, and you're 2 feet tall. He is not even ankle deep in the water, you are neck deep in it. The waves are piddly to him. In fact, he could stop them if he needed to. You, they're about to kill you. The rest of your world, you don't know when the journey ends. You don't know where you're going. You don't know how. You just know you're in the car and he's driving. That's it. But at some point, you got to look at him and you got to go. You love me. You love me. I trust you. You love me. I trust you. Oswald Chambers once said, I love this quote, if you fear God, that is, know who he is and trust him. If you fear God, you fear nothing else. Isn't that amazing? If you fear God, you fear nothing else. If you do not fear God, you will fear everything else. Isn't that beautiful? If you fear God, you will fear nothing else. Trust me. You will hold his hand and you will go, you got me. You love me. But if you do not fear him, you will fear everything else. And you should, because everything else is scary without God. So that is what God whispers to my heart. Renaud, do you know that I love you? If you do, then let it go, man. Give me your stuff. Give me your life. Give me everything. And I promise you, I will make it a great one. Whatever it ends up being, because I will make your path straight. Trust God because he loves you and because he can see what you will never know. He's got your back just like I've got the back of my children, whether they believe it or not. Let's pray.